help us out. KBOO.FM/give is the website to donate, or you can text KBOO to 44321, and we really, really appreciate everybody who is helping us out.
Thank you, thank you. We'll see y'all next week. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves.
Wait, we should reintroduce ourselves. This is The Gap. We're sorry we didn't get to talk to you. We're going to work on it. Send us an email, thegapradio@gmail.com.
Hopefully the phones will work next week. Yep. I'm Tammy.
Thank you for listening.
See ya.
Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY hardcore, and beyond. Every month features a different theme where we delve into the history of a specific genre topic or musical location, or simply churn out the best, brightest, and ugliest sounds from around the globe. Join me, DJ Krauthammer, every first Friday night, Saturday morning of the month, at midnight till 3 a.m. for Oil for Kisses to experience it for yourself. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
KBOO
Portland.
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
Hi, this is Peter Himmelman. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
Welcome to Beyond Your Front Door, your adventure guide to the Oregon coast. I'm your host, Dina Pavlis. I'm pleased to bring you a two-part show this week. First, we'll be speaking with Dave Lowe, the Program and Education Manager for Solve. We'll talk about how the organization has evolved over their 50-plus years and how you can get involved. The second half of the show, I speak with Rosemary Pastral, the Executive Director of Siuslaw Watershed Council. We'll talk about what a watershed is and the council's role within watershed communities. Join me now with Dave Lowe, the Program and Education Manager for Solve. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to chat coast and coastal education stuff with you.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Before we begin, can you share a bit about yourself and how you became involved with Solve?
Yeah, sure. So I moved to Oregon in 2012 from North Carolina and immediately got involved with waste stream diversion, sustainability, nonprofit, and its intersection with community development efforts. And Solve was one of the first organizations that I kind of like eyeballed. And the opportunity finally presented itself in July of last year. So that's how I kind of got involved with Solve, is jumping into their Portland program manager role last year. And since then, have expanded statewide and kind of taken on statewide education and statewide programming.
Great. So for listeners who are not familiar with Solve, can you share a little bit about the program?
Solve has been around for over 50 years and has been doing just so many things, from vandalism and graffiti mitigation to litter cleanups to invasive removal to planting of natives to youth and adult education and public awareness campaigns. And so Saul's real mission is to connect Oregonians to the land and create stewards of every Oregonian and to really give people the appreciation for this wonderful state.
You mentioned that you've been around for over 50 years. Is it different today than it was 50 years ago?
Yeah, I would have to imagine everything's a lot different today than it was 50 years ago. But I think Saul in particular has gone through a number of iterative evolutions. But one thing has always remained constant, which is the activation of the Oregonian in service of responsibly stewarded natural spaces and communities and neighborhoods. And so that's remained constant. The way that it's been done has been, you know, kind of a reflection of the community's evolution itself. And so the introduction of more technology has allowed us to have a farther, deeper, more engaging reach. One important thing is that we used to do vandalism and specifically graffiti mitigation. In fact, SOLV used to be, you know, an acronym that meant Stop Oregon Litter and Vandalism Everywhere.
Oh.
Right. And so, you know, we dropped the E because Oregon and everywhere is kind of like, well, what do we mean? And then we realized that we're not doing vandalism mitigation anymore, that our focus is going to be on litter and invasive removal and planting and stewardship of land. And so now SOLV is more of just a concept, right? You could think of SOLV as just what it, a bit more on the nose. Let's solve it.
Right.
And so, you know, we've changed and evolved over the years to match the fact that communities change and our outlook changes and Oregon changes. And I'm really proud to be part of an organization that is a reflection of the community that it seeks to serve.
My introduction to SOLV was mostly in relation to the beach cleanups here on the coast. How often and where along the coast are the beach cleanups held?
Everywhere year round, but most focused is going to be in the spring after the storms come in and they help wash up some of the stuff from the ocean and the marine debris. And then again in July after the celebrations that inevitably encroach on our beaches and leave them a little bit less than spick and span. So July 5th cleanups are a big deal. And then again in the fall to kind of tidy up after summer activities and get ready to wrap up our access to like snowy plover sites that are done nesting, to get into some places that have been restricted the rest of the year and to kind of cap off the summer season. So those are our focus areas for coastal cleanups. But we also administer and have an Adopt-a-Beach program that happens year-round with people who go for their morning walks and pick up litter on their way. And we have loads of individuals and organizations up and down the coast that hold sometimes monthly cleanups. You know, I'm thinking of Tiffany at Seaside Aquarium, who's out all the time, right? And also beach adopting for near Haystack Rock. And so it's year-round, but with a focus in the spring, the fall, and then right there in July.
Do you have any other coastal programs other than the beach cleanup?
Yeah, so it's all somewhat loosely and it sounds concretely looped together. So I mentioned that we have these beach cleanups that really rely on local expertise and people who live there and experience the space and can make responsible decisions because of that proximity. But then we also work with the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department to have a state and coastwide Oregon Adopt-a-Beach where we inspire folks to take on a mile-ish stretch of their favorite coastway and take it under their wing for a few years and record cleanup and stewardship activities throughout that year. And these folks can be individuals because they walk the beach, as aforementioned, or they can be schools, or they can be businesses. And so that's an ongoing effort to really connect people with our coastline and the unique relationship that the Oregon public has to its coastline, which, as far as I'm aware, is still unique in the U.S. as far as it being public land and no private ownership.
How can people and groups sign up to take part in the beach cleanups as well as adopt a beach or adopt a mile?
Adopt a mile. You can adopt 7 miles. You can adopt 30 feet. Adopt a beach.
Adopt an area.
Adopt an area. Well, it may not surprise you that our website is going to be the cleanest and most direct way to engage with this. And if you head to solveoregon.org, you'll find our How to Get Involved section, and that will give you two pathways. One will be the general event calendar, where you can put in your zip code or any kind of keywords where you can search for things happening in your area. Chances are that there will be something in your area within the next 4 days of your searching, particularly on the coast. We're highly active. And then in the Adopt a Beach section, it's a simple matter of completing an enrollment form, giving us some information about who you are, how to contact you, the entity in which you would like to make the adoption in the name of. So if it's for your business or for your informal group of people or for your school, your classroom, what have you. And then also giving us an idea of the stretch of beach that you would like to take under your wing. And that gives me an opportunity to kind of take a look at our map and see if we have loads of adopters in the area already and nudge you north or south a touch and see if we can't get more blanket coverage and stewardship of that area.
Well, when people are picking up trash on the beach, do you have them record what they're picking up in some way? Are they taking photos? Are they weighing what they pick up? Or how do you record what's being done?
All of the above. And really, we don't want the process of recording to be a barrier to the action itself. And so we do ask people to record how effective they've been. So if that's a weight or a guesstimation of bags of trash, or just some interesting photos of the things that we've gleaned off of our coastline that are no longer going to be there. And we do ask for our folks to tell us a little bit about what they've done. We then report out on that information, both to our partners and funders like Oregon Parks and Recreation, but we also share that data as we can to other entities up and down the coastline like the Ocean Conservancy or Surfrider, to kind of make sure that we are grabbing a decent and healthy snapshot of our collective effort to clean up our coast.
Fantastic. So, Dave, in researching for the show, I read that Solve has a sustainability mission as well, and I was wondering if you could share the efforts that Solve is taking in that direction.
I'm really proud to have joined this team at a time where we're rebuilding and kind of re-engaging in this, post-ish COVID world, where we've all had the time and effort to kind of sit back and see what's really important. And you know, one big effort is decentralizing our supplies. One of the big boons of working with Solve is that we can supply you or your organization or your informal group with cleanup supplies, ranging from, you know, bags to capture the trash, to gloves, to litter grabbers, to, you know, a first aid kit and signage and safety training and all these wonderful things that really prepare you to put on a successful event for you and yours. Well, in the past, that's all been shipped out of Portland, Oregon. Now we're really starting to look at and activate on creating a statewide network of supply hubs nested in, you know, community organizations or parks and rec or chambers of commerce and things like this. So kind of decentralizing our supply hubs to cut down on the amount of shipping that we're doing. And that's having a pretty sizable impact on our carbon emissions as an organization. I believe a report will be coming out early next year on our efficacy there from our sustainability manager. And we're also working to establish a network of breweries, which, if you know anything about Oregon, you know that we have breweries just about everywhere, which means that we have grain bags everywhere, which means that we have reusable receptacles for litter. Instead of using plastic, even if it is, as Solve's bags are now, 90% post-consumer material, we can use grain bags from our local breweries to supply these supply hubs and to give a second, third, fourth life to an item that otherwise would have landed directly into the landfill. And so those are two major efforts around our sustainability that are like shovel ready now, that that some people up and down the coast may already be familiar with, having taken part in our Oregon Spring cleanup or the Beach and Riverside cleanup that just wrapped up last month.
That's fantastic. I noticed that you had some great educational information on your website, especially under the Why We Care section, and I was wondering if you could elaborate a bit about what people might find there and what types of training you offer. You mentioned some training already, so if there's anything additional that you wanted to share about your training sessions or workshops.
There are two really great ways to get involved with the educative resources available through Solve. And one is to become a Solve leader, which is to say to gain the keys to the castle, to run your own event in your local area for your local communities. And that really is just like a 45-minute orientation. But then that gains you access to what we lovingly call the Solve Leader Portal, where you'll find tons of collaboratively put together information on our education network and resources available up and down the coast as well as statewide. You know, these resources would range from the Hatfield Marine Science Center to information on how litter finds its way into the ocean and how, you know, a clean beach starts at your doorstep in Pendleton. You know, kind of talking about and highlighting the fact that 80% of the world's oceanic and marine debris comes from rivers. And right. So how river health equals oceanic health, which obviously impacts coastal health. And so really kind of connecting all of our efforts across, you'll see educator resources on our website for our formal and informal educators that give you ideas on how to build curriculum for your homeschool program or your summer or after school programs. And then the second way is also through our Growing a Greener Generation program, where we work directly with our formal and informal educators across the state to outfit them with a training on how to be a solve leader, to put on their own events, but also curriculum development ideas to ingratiate sustainability and service learning componentry into their classroom. And so those two efforts combined of adult education and engagement and youth education and engagement are really the two focal points that we're looking to expand and expound upon in the coming years.
Wow, what a lot of different resources that are available. It's really nice. Well, Dave, one of my favorite parts of this show is asking people to share a favorite memory or experience. And I'm wondering if you have a favorite memory related to your work with Solve that you would like to share.
I do, and it ties into an unmentioned sustainability effort that has been underway for a little bit, and I'm really excited about expanding, and that is when I had the opportunity this past spring to really travel up and down the coast and meet with our partners, and I had the chance to meet with an organization called Wash to Shore. And Wash to Shore diverts marine debris and then activates them into world-class art installations. And I got the opportunity to visit not only their gallery, but their actual, like, artist space. And just the way that you can take the liability of marine debris and turn it into the asset of connectivity and art and celebration is something that I think everybody can appreciate, and it just stuck with me. And you know, I've been in the waste stream diversion world for 10 years here in Oregon, and to see it crop up in a way that I didn't really expect, in that, you know, things that washed up literally ashore being leveraged in this way really spoke to me and got me very excited about how can we continue to have that conversation of that liability into asset, that just because waste is washing up doesn't mean that it's like a frowny face thing, that we can pivot into something really beautiful. And it speaks to the Oregonian spirit, and it's what keeps me going when the days get grindy and tough.
I love that. Yeah, that program's really great. And I also love how they really are making such a statement and teaching us about what's in the ocean, but in a way, like you say, that's not just a total downer. There's so much total downer all the time now, seems like, that we hear. So it's really nice. I agree. Well, Dave, I'm just going to take a minute to let listeners know, if you tuned in late, you've been listening to Beyond Your Front Door, produced for the Pacifica Radio Network in the studios of KXCR here in beautiful downtown Florence, Oregon. I've been speaking with Dave Lowe, the Program and Education Manager for Solve, an Oregon-based organization that works to restore and preserve Oregon's environment by mobilizing the power of volunteers and partners with the generosity of donors. If you missed any portion of this show, you can find the entire show on SoundCloud.com. Just search SoundCloud for Beyond Your Front Door and look for The Wave. Dave, we are just about out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we wrap up?
Just thank you. You know, if you're listening to this, that means you care. And people who care, who makes my work happen, it's very likely that you've bumped into Solve in the past, and that hopefully that you will in the future. And stay engaged, stay out there, and reach out. I'd love to hear stories, comments. I'd love to find ways to get you involved. Complaints. Hey, I'm here to recognize that everything can be better. So continue stewarding a cleaner, greener Oregon with me.
That's great. And Dave, how about if we give out your website and contact information one more time for people who maybe tuned in late?
100%. Thank you for that. You can reach me specifically at Dave, D-A-V-E, at solveoregon.org. That's solve, the word with an E after the V. Or you can reach me via the phone at 971-346-2711. And our website is solveoregon.org.
Thank you so much, Dave, for taking time to be here. It was super interesting, and I'm really excited about all the work that you guys are doing.
Pleasure being here, and look forward to the next time.
Great. Thank you. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with Siuslaw Watershed Council Executive Director Rosemary Pasdral. Rosemary, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Can you share a little bit about yourself and your role with the Siuslaw Watershed Council?
Yes, I am the executive director at the Watershed Council, and so I do a lot of the operational and administrative tasks, and I also serve as the chair of the Siuslaw Coho Partnership in that role.
And what is a watershed?
From a hydrological perspective, a watershed is an area of land that drains all the streams and lakes to a common outlet. So I like to think of a drop of rain and the course that that raindrop takes until meeting the ocean. But a watershed is much more than just hydrology. It's also the communities that live in that watershed, how they use the land, the flora and fauna that exists in the landscape and so much more. The boundaries of a watershed are identified based on the geology and geography of the terrain, and they serve as a natural boundary for native species that inhabit the watershed.
You know, that's really fascinating, actually, because I never really, like, occurred to me all of those facets, and that's really interesting. Thank you. So what is the role, then, of the Siuslaw Watershed Council?
We are a nonprofit based in the watershed, and our service area is the natural boundary of the Siuslaw Watershed, as well as the coastal lakes basins, which flow directly into the Pacific Ocean. And our mission at the Watershed Council is to support sound economic, social, and environmental uses of natural and human resources in the Siuslaw River Basin and Coastal Lakes Basins. We have programs encompassing everything from environmental education to in-stream restoration projects.
Okay, interesting. What are the boundaries of the Siuslaw Watershed, and what are some of the challenges with managing the area?
The boundaries of the Siuslaw Watershed extend all the way from Lorain and Triangle Lake area to Florence, which is about 800 square miles in total.
Wow.
That is, of course, an enormous area, but we don't really manage all of that land. And we actually don't own any land. We're a non-regulatory organization. We don't manage any land. But we serve more as a liaison between the people and the environment of the Siuslaw and Coastal Lakes basins, and we try to provide opportunities for local community members to learn about and directly implement watershed stewardship activities.
Do you have any specific challenges that come with that, you know, because it is such a large area?
There are, of course, challenges with having such a huge service area for a single organization, and it really comes down to capacity. We are based out of Mapleton and have a strong presence there in Mapleton, upriver on the Lake Creek section, and in Florence. But it is hard to reach all arms of the Siuslaw Watershed and all community members, and that's something that we continuously strive to do.
You know, I went to your website, which is fabulous, and I read the story of the Siuslaw. You did an incredible job putting that interactive map together. I was wondering if you can briefly discuss the changes that occurred along the Siuslaw that have created some of the challenges that we face today.
Thank you. Yes, the story of the Siuslaw project is very awesome, and the success of that project is entirely due to one of my predecessors as well as our organizational partners. But the Siuslaw Watershed is characteristically dynamic, both from an ecological and a cultural perspective. Ecologically, the terrain here is constantly changing. So if you think about a stream in the headwaters, each winter causes enormous change in the morphology of the stream. One winter, it'll be on one side of the valley, and the next winter, it'll be on the other side of the valley. And then from a cultural perspective, the Siuslaw Watershed has also changed quite a bit. It was managed and stewarded entirely by native Siuslaw people for generations and supported prolific ecological production, including salmon runs only second to the Columbia River Basin. And then following European settlement, streams were straightened, forests were logged, salmon numbers were greatly reduced. And this is all coinciding with road building, development, and now climate change. So available habitat for native salmon significantly declined over the last 100 years or so. So we're working together with the local community members, tribes, as well as several local conservation and land management organizations towards salmon recovery and salmon habitat improvement. Our restoration projects really cover the gamut. We restore in-stream complexity by creating large wood structures that provide refuge for fish. We restore aquatic passage by replacing old culverts and bridges. We reconnect floodplains in estuary and upstream environments. And we restore riparian habitats through several riparian revegetation programs, including our native plant distribution program.
Have you guys been able to monitor the effects of any of your completed projects, and what kind of outcomes are you seeing?
Yes, we do monitor our restoration projects, and I guess observationally, we are seeing that we're making a positive impact on fish habitat. So we're seeing that within a year of large wood placement in a fish-bearing stream, there is increased morphological complexity, shade, and available fish refuge. From a scientific standpoint, this is a really hard question to answer. Monitoring the success of our habitat restoration projects, because ultimately the goal is salmon recovery, but it's very difficult to directly monitor fish populations, in part because there are so many, they are so different, but also because there are so many portions of the salmon life history and life cycle that we don't have control over or don't see. They spend a large portion of their life in the ocean, and that is not within our service area, so we don't do anything there. And also just because there are so many various environmental factors that are challenging to monitor and then link directly to fish populations and survival.
So if I understand what you're saying is something could be happening to fish out in the ocean that is preventing them from coming, you know, even surviving or coming up. And so the numbers that you're seeing may not, if they're down, let's say, may not be related to anything you've done.
Correct. Yes. There are several factors, climatic oscillations, climate change, fishing regulations, all sorts of things like that. So.
Yeah. And this year I know that they have said no salmon fishing in the river.
Yes.
Here. And so that's also a change that could increase the numbers we see coming up. I don't know. But so, yeah, I can see what you're saying, how factors can happen outside of your area that would impact what we're seeing, and it may or may not be related to the work that you've done.
Yes. But these freshwater streams that are within the Sayuslaw watershed are where salmon spawn and where they're born and where they grow up. So they are really important portions of the salmon life cycle, and creating a nice habitat up here is significant as well.
Do you have any notable projects coming up that you would like to talk about?
Our annual native plant distribution program is coming up in February, and with our NPD program, we distribute over 10,000 native plants to the local community to be planted along stream sides and riparian areas. And so this program creates widespread riparian revegetation, which ultimately leads to more habitat and cooler stream temperatures. And then also our partnership, the Sayuslaw Coho Partnership, just received a focused investment from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. So this will result in 6 years of secured funding for restoration projects across the Sayuslaw watershed and have the additional impact of increased jobs for people interested in participating in habitat stewardship in the Sayuslaw watershed.
That's exciting. Congratulations, too, on that. If people wanted to find out more about the native plant distribution, how can they go about that?
One way is to visit our website at www.sayuslaw.org. Another way is to sign up for our quarterly newsletter, or you can reach us by emailing outreach@sayuslaw.org.
Are you guys also on social media at all?
Facebook, Instagram, that's it.
Okay, awesome. All right. I read about the recent agreement between ODFW and the Coquel Indian Tribe. I'm wondering if there is any overlap with the Sayuslaw watershed, and if so, what impact you think this might have on the watershed?
The Coquel Indian Tribe's service area includes Lane County, which encompasses the Sayuslaw watershed, so it is possible that this agreement will influence the Sayuslaw watershed. However, I think it's really geared heavily towards lands and waters in southern Oregon. But we do work in partnership with the Confederated Tribes of the Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Sayuslaw Indians, and the Confederated Tribes of the Siletz Indians. And both of these tribes, as well as ODFW, are core partners in the Sayuslaw Coho Partnership. From that perspective, we all work together quite a bit on projects in the Sayuslaw watershed and coastal lakes basins.
So, Rosemary, one of my favorite parts of this show is asking people to share a favorite memory or experience. Do you have a favorite memory or story related to your involvement with the Sayuslaw Watershed Council that you would like to share?
I think one of my favorite memories was in August of this year when OWEB awarded the Sayuslaw Coho Partnership our Focused Investment Partnership grant. That was many, many years in the making, far before I was involved with the Watershed Council. But I know that it was lots of hard work, decades of really, really successful collaboration and partnership between organizations in the watershed, and just an enormous dedication by a lot of people here. So it was really great to see that recognized by the state.
That's nice. And for people who might not be familiar with OWEB, can you expand on what that is?
Yes. OWEB is the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and you can find out more about that program at oregon.gov/OWEB.
Rosemary, I just want to take a moment to let listeners know you've been listening to Beyond Your Front Door, produced for the Pacifica Radio Network in the studios of KXCR in beautiful downtown Florence, Oregon. I've been speaking with Rosemary Pastrell, Rosemary is the executive director of Siuslaw Watershed Council, and we've been talking about the role the council plays in relation to the Siuslaw Watershed. If you missed any portion of the show, you can find the entire show on SoundCloud.com. Just search for Beyond Your Front Door, Oregon, and look for The Wave. Rosemary, we are just about out of time. Is there anything else you would like to share before we wrap up?
Yes. So as I mentioned earlier, the Siuslaw Coho Partnership just secured several years of funding, so we'll likely be hiring for various types of positions, from restoration practitioners to stakeholder engagement and outreach to accounting and monitoring. And the Watershed Council is currently hiring for a financial manager. And then I'll just reiterate that our native plant distribution is coming up, so be on the lookout for sign-up forms on our website. And you can also join our newsletter by emailing Tim at outreach@siuslaw.org. We also have monthly recreational activities open to everybody in the watershed, whether or not you're a member of the Watershed Council, so you can find more information about that on our website as well.
Great. Well, Rosemary, thanks so much for taking time to be here today. It's been really interesting.
Thank you, Dina. It's been wonderful talking with you.
Thanks for tuning in today. Thanks also to Pacifica Radio member stations for airing Beyond Your Front Door. And thanks to local band Jump in the Rails for their rendition of Smith Chapel, the theme song used for this show. I hope you have a great week and get some time beyond your front door.
Drive is happening right now. We invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. Contribute now and help us